We'll call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order in Juneau, Alaska. Today is February the 23rd. It's a couple of minutes after 9 a.m. The co-chairman, Senator McKinnon, is ill today. Present at the table, we have Vice Chairman Senator Bishop, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Machicki, and Senator Olson. On today's agenda, we have a presentation by the Department of Commerce regarding the reinsurance program, Senate Bill 374. People have commitments. We'll try to get through this agenda item around 9 a.m. this morning. So with that, I'll turn it over to the commissioner, Commissioner Haddock. You have the floor. Identify yourself, introduce whoever you want to assist you, and please proceed in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Chris Laddick, the Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And I'd like to thank you and the committee members for your work on the HB 374 legislation last session. A special shout out to Senator McKinnon for her leadership role in that process. HB 374 authorized the reinsurance program, but the legislation also gave the Division of Insurance the authority to apply to the federal government for a 1332 waiver. Director Winghire and I were in Washington, D.C. about 3 weeks ago, and we are here to give you an update on the implementation of 374 and also the 1332 application process. What we heard from CMS in Washington, D.C. is good news so far, and I'd like to give a shout out to Director Winghire. Special thanks to her and her team for expediting the application process and submitting it prior to the transition to the new administration. With that, I'll turn it over to Director Winghire.
Director.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lori Winghire. I'm the Director of the Division of Insurance. I'd like to begin. We have a PowerPoint prepared for this committee, and I would begin on slide 2, and it begins with somewhat of a recap of where we left off in June when this committee and the Senate and the House almost unanimously passed HB 374, which created within it the Alaska Reinsurance Program. The reinsurance program is within title or within Chapter 55, which was at one time the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association high-risk pool for the state of Alaska. The legislature then went on to appropriate $55 million into this fund, or the health insurance fund, which was used for the reinsurance program. What we did within this was the high-risk pool under the Affordable Care Act basically existed no more. The individuals within the high-risk pool went from the high-risk pool to the individual market. They took their chronic conditions, their diseases, their illnesses, and they went from this program that was subsidized by the insurance companies and the state of Alaska into the individual market. And in doing so, they created a program that was not the 22,000 members was unable to sustain. We found ourselves in a situation where the premiums had skyrocketed to a point that individuals could no longer afford to pay the premiums. The average premium, just rounded numbers, was about $800 per individual. Up and down a little bit depending on your age band, but about $800 per person. So a family was paying about...
Per month, sir.
Yes. So a family of four was paying roughly $3,200 per month for insurance. That was not sustainable. In addition, we, in 2010, when this rolled out, and in 2014, when actually the individual market began, we had four insurers. In 2017, we have one insurer, Primera. So we knew when we came to you with HB 374, we had to do something to stabilize the market. We presented you with HB 374, you passed HB 374, and you funded $55 million for it for 1 year. We took ACHEA, recreated it not as a direct high-risk pool, but as a reinsurance pool. The reason we did this was because the Affordable Care Act, one of the benefits is the guaranteed issue provision, meaning no one can be declined coverage due to a pre-existing condition. A CHIA, even though it was the high-risk pool, there were certain conditions that you had to be diagnosed with and you had to be declined insurance in the individual market to qualify. So the bill adjusted that somewhat, and we made it a reinsurance program. It also got the state, or a CHIA, out of being a primary insurer.
Chairman?
Yes, Senator Machicki.
So most of us heard this bill last year and passed the bill, understanding the challenges the state was facing. But could you assume that those at home hearing about a $55 million bill have no idea what reinsurance means, and describe that just briefly?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. If someone is reinsured, or if you were an individual in the state of Alaska in the individual market that was diagnosed with one of the conditions that's listed in the regulation that followed this bill, you would purchase at this time your insurance from Primera. They're the only insurer we have. Primera would then pay for your claims, your treatments. They would then cede the claim to a CHIA, to the insurance program. You as an individual should never know that you are being insured through this program. That's part of the benefit, that the individuals in this program are not identified. They don't know that they are being reinsured by the state through this program. For all they know, they're insured with Primera. They'll deal with Primera. Primera will administer their claims. They'll pay their premiums to Primera. But the claims, because of the 30 conditions, the cancers, the hemophilia, the end-stage renal disease, that those claims are then ceded to the reinsurance program.
Question.
Senator Machicki.
So there's a HIPAA-compliant agency within the state, which is essentially a CHIA administration that's dealing with the secondary claims, if you will. Are those cases being somewhat, I mean, would you say that it's managed care, or do they just essentially accept whatever claims come in? Or it just seems like with this cost that those individual cases should be somewhat heavily managed to ensure the best value for the state.
Through this chair, Senator, when the bill was enacted, we adopted regulations. From that, there's a grant agreement to get the funds to a CHIA, and then there's a contract between a CHIA, which is an entity of the state, and an administrator. In that agreement, we gave between the regulation and that agreement, we were pretty heavy-handed on reporting the managed care, the fiduciary responsibility that we would expect of any insurer, including Primera, because it is state funds.
Senator Machicki. Thank you, Senator Machicki. Director, please continue.
I have jumped ahead to page 4. I know there's an interest of time. If I'm going too fast or skipping slides that you want me to back up on, please let me know. Again, the eligibility requirements for
the time. I think there's just one member that has a time constraint. So,
thank you, Senator.
Don't dress yourself.
The eligibility requirements for a CHIA, and this was the old CHIA, where again the notice you had to be Alaska residency, and then the notice of rejection and the receive the restricted riders and such. And this is part of what HB 374 amended. At the time in 2014, you can see that we had an enrollment in a CHIA, and this is for the medical part. We went from 498 in 2013. You can see where it declined down to 130 to the comprehensive enrollment of 49. Now, why are we keeping the comprehensive enrollment? And I want to explain this to the committee because I think it's important that the reason we keep a CHIA at all is because Medicare supplements, which is basically the pharmaceutical coverage, we don't have a market in the state of Alaska for Medicare supplement coverage, and we have still allowed that coverage to exist through ACHEA in the state of Alaska. Other states have basically abandoned their high-risk pool and taken the statutes out. We have allowed ours to continue because we don't have an insurance company that has offered these Medicare supplements. And that's basically what's left in the pool or in ACHEA, which was in some ways fortunate because when we needed it to come up with a solution to the Affordable Care Act for the individual market, it was there as a vehicle for us to create this reinsurance program. But just you can see that the number from 498 went down to 130 as these individuals went in to the individual market. Again, the guaranteed issue, the insurers could not deny coverage, and the high-risk pool basically became somewhat of the individual market. The pool was designed to stabilize, or the reinsurance program, the bill HB 374, was designed to stabilize the individual market. It was designed to make it a long-term solution, providing health care insurance to those that could not get their insurance through an employer or another program. They don't qualify for Medicaid expansion. They don't have an employer to purchase their insurance for. At one point, we had 23,000 people in this program. We think there's more that should be enrolled, but at this point, they're probably paying the penalty rather than enroll because of the fact the premiums are too high. They do get premium tax credits if they're low to moderate income, and that's an important part when we get to the waiver to talk about. But we know that this is an important program for 23,000 Alaskans to purchase health care insurance in the state of Alaska. And if it went away, if Primera were to leave the state, we don't have a backup plan. We didn't in 2016 when we presented you with this bill. And quite honestly, we don't have another insurer at this point coming into the state to write in the individual market. There is interest if we solve this long term, but not at this point. And long term meaning how our waiver goes and what happens in DC as they look at repairing the Affordable Care Act.
Senator Machicki.
This is an unusual question. But if these individuals say there's 130 this year or whatever the number is, if they were employed and had one of these conditions of the highest cost codes, would they be covered by their employer and not have a need for ACHEA?
Through the chair, yes, sir, if their employer had a plan.
The other question, another question that I have is that have we seen new entries into this pool of people that are from outside the state?
Mr. Chairman, no, we have not. If anything, the plan has condensed a little. Our enrollment numbers are down for 2017. We think we can't be certain why, but that we're down a couple thousand. We think that it's part of the economy, that there has been some that have left the state, and possibly some have now qualified because of a loss of job for Medicaid expansion. And the other thing we think is that there was somewhat of a scare with the new administration coming in and the concern that the Affordable Care Act was going away, or that you were going to lose, if you were an enrollee, your premium tax credits. So they didn't bother to enroll at all. We did somewhat of a public awareness campaign to try and get people to understand that at the end of enrollment, January 31st, the Affordable Care Act was just as it was at the end of January 31st, 2016, and that they should enroll. But I think people were just concerned with the future of the Affordable Care Act, and we lost some.
And with the advent of a lower enrollments, have we seen a lower cost to this program?
Mr. Chairman, we should. But in saying that, it could be, and this is part of the issue is that those that don't need it will not buy it. So it'll be the healthy that don't buy it, and those that need it will. So our loss ratio will not necessarily improve.
Please continue. Senator Michiki.
So here's the unusual part. So just theoretically, of course, philosophically, one would have to think about if this was a good plan or not. But if the state were to hire these 130 individuals for $80,000 a year of burden in a position, it would cost the state $10 million instead of $55. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I don't know if your number is correct, Senator, but there is the fact that that cost of their insurance or their health care would transfer to someone else. That is true, whatever that number is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. Please continue, Director.
The fund itself, I'm on slide 8, and this is the health insurance fund that was created into HB 374 to put the premium tax dollars. And just as a recap, the premium tax dollars are most insurance policies within the state. You're paying a 2.7% tax. There's some exceptions to that. Title insurance, you're paying 1%, so there's some exception to that. But it health insurance included, life insurance, workers' compensation, your auto, your homeowners, aircraft, watercraft, there's a tax on it. The state collects 60-some million in these taxes each year. Last year, you appropriated 55 million of that into this fund. And that is what is funding this at this time. You also put a sunset on this bill of June 30th, 2018. And in that, you basically gave us 2 years, or we took it as a strong indicator that you gave us 2 years to find another way to fund this reinsurance program going forward. Now, the results of this, we had told you that we thought it would have a very positive impact because in 15 and 16, both with Primera and Moda, we had seen average increases of right around 40% from each market to the individual, and that's part of why we were saying this can't go on. This is not sustainable. People can't continue to pay these premiums. You can't do 40% year after year after year and expect people to be able to afford it. We had people calling us. We had people were calling you saying it's more than our mortgage, and it couldn't continue. When Primera filed their rates, it was 7.3% average for 2017. That's a success story. It's the lowest increase we've seen in a long, long time in the individual market. And that's an immediate impact to individuals, to constituents, when you're taking a 7.3% increase instead of a 40% increase. Now, you may have heard from consumers that their bill was much more than that. And in all honesty, that's probably true if you were a Moda consumer going to Primera, because Moda's rates were less than Primera's. So we've got to get those consumers up on the same playing field for them to see the importance of HB 374. But if you were a Primera client to begin with, the average rate increase was 7.3%. So it was a success story, and we do expect that we will see the continued impact of this if the bill or the program remains. This year in the budget bill, you will notice that we're calling it a fix on slide 10. When this bill was funded, and perhaps it explains it a little bit better on the next slide, when the bill was passed, I should say, you passed it on a fiscal year from July to June 30. But insurance policies run from January to December 31st. So the funding for what the rates took a 7.3% would in theory run out June 30. So we need to fix that $55 million to actually go from January 1st, 2017 to December 31st, 2017. And then we're asking for basically what we're calling a grace period, because if you get treated on December 31st, as you know, when you go to the doctor, that bill doesn't get paid or you don't receive your portion of what you owe the very next day. So we need time for the payment to process to actually get to the reinsurance program to close it out. So we're asking for a six-month period to close out those claims for 2017.
And is your ask in the form of legislation?
It's in the budget bill, sir.
The budget bill?
Yes. So what we're asking for is we're repealing what we asked for in 2017. We're asking you to reinstate it to coincide with the calendar year. And then we're asking for an additional 55 to come from fiscal year 18 to be used for calendar year 18.
Senator Bishop.
So how much do do you have a ballpark on the balance that we used in 17?
I do, the chair, Senator Bishop. I do.
Okay.
$55 million, because as of this date we have not paid a claim.
Okay, so it's a wash. Could be a wash.
Well,
in the budget.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Dunleavy.
To the chair, just so it's clear, the ask last year was $55 million. You want to repeal it, reinstate it for a different calendar year. That's $55 million. Then you're asking for another $55 million. Is that the end of the ask, or can we anticipate in the future additional asks for this program?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, can I put that on hold for just a couple slides and talk to you about the waiver of what we've done? Because
sure.
The sunset clause, where you ask us to get additional funding, I think it'll answer the question.
As long as we can get clarity.
Absolutely.
Okay. Senator Van Himmel.
Okay, thank you. Through the chair, just to build on Senator Bishop's question, when he said it's a wash, and you mentioned that no claims have been paid yet, when you said that you want an additional $55 million for fiscal year 18, are we talking $110 million total, or are we talking, you're kind of shuffling the deck chairs around a little bit, the same $55
million? Director.
Through the chair, Senator Von Emhoff, it's $110 million for two fiscal periods, 55 each.
So, but how much have we used already?
Senator Von Emhoff, through the chair, we have not received a claim yet from Primera. We have not paid anything out of the ACHIA fund yet.
Senator Von Emhoff.
Have you done an audit to determine what may be coming down the pike? And so you can sort of plan and budget?
Through the chair, Senator Von Emhoff, we have several actuarial studies that we can have a pretty good idea what's coming. But because these claims would have just started January 1st, they have not processed through Primera, been determined to be eligible for the program, and made their way to the fund yet for us to pay them or for the Alaska Reinsurance Program to reimburse Primera for them. So at this point, we are holding the $55
million.
Thank Senator
you.
Von Himmel. Thank you, Senator Von Himmel. Director?
The second portion of the bill, which is getting to Senator Dunleavy's question, allowed the division to apply for a Section 1332 or an innovation waiver. This is coming right out of the Affordable Care Act. And it gives the states, the individual states, some creativity or innovation to look at their programs and determine if there is a mechanism of which they can deliver the Affordable Care Act in a better way to their constituents, be it the small group or the individual. And they give you a waivable item list. Now, in saying this, CMS has given one waiver. They can only do one as of January 1st, 2017, and the only state that has applied and been approved is Hawaii, and theirs was on small group. If you're familiar with Hawaii, you know that they've had a very successful small group or small employer program for a number of years, and they have basically asked to be exempted from the Affordable Care Act and use their state program as opposed to the federal program, and theirs was granted. We came back and said that we wanted to look at the premium tax credits. And what our thought was in getting to Senator Dunleavy's and the direction of the legislature to find an alternative method to fund this long term is there are significant premium tax credits paid to individuals in Alaska. And if I could, I'm going to ask you to jump ahead to slide 18 for a minute. I think that this helps me explain it better, and I probably should have renumbered my slides. If you think that we had a rate increase of 7.3% as opposed to what Primera was projecting of 42%, our premiums are somewhat suppressed. So the premium tax credits that are based on premiums are lower. Those are paid by the federal government. They're not paying as much to Alaskans in the individual market of low to moderate income because of HB 374. So we basically saved the federal government quite a bit of money by passing HB 374. We ask them in our waiver for that money to fund the reinsurance program going forward. The baseline in that is the is what the premium tax credits, the APTCs, the advanced premium tax credits that have been paid or are expected to be paid going forward in the coming years in Alaska. Now, this is based on the Affordable Care Act as it existed on January 1st, 2017. The waiver shows what they expect to pay, or the APTC waiver column, with HB 374. The difference is what we're asking the federal government to give back to the state of Alaska. As you can see, that's a significant chunk of the appropriation. Now, it doesn't equate to dollar to dollar, which I have on another slide, but it's a significant part of what is needed to fund the reinsurance program. The difference between the baseline without the waiver, the APTCs with the waiver, that difference is what we've asked. We spent considerable amount of time once the bill was passed and signed by the governor, working with actuaries, with ICERS, completing the application for CMS, because it isn't an application, it's a narrative explaining what you want to do, how you're going to do it, that you're not, you're still staying within the AC guardrails, as they call them, and submitting this to CMS. We submitted it, and it came back as complete. Not approved, but complete. It is now sitting at CMS. It's posted on their federal website as complete. We are working. We've got a technicality we need to work out with them that I'll talk to you about in a minute. But we're the second state that's done this. And they're using our bill and this program as a model for other states. We have talked with Senator Murkowski. We've talked to Congressman Young, Senator Sullivan. Senator Sullivan has talked to Secretary Price. We have met with CMS. We have met with the Trump administration before they were the Trump administration during the transition. They're supportive of this program. We're pretty confident that we're going to get an approval on this. Not 100%, because I don't think you can ever be 100%. But we don't think we're dead in the water with the change in the administration. So we're hoping that your direction to find alternate funding for this to go forward in the long term, that we've succeeded in that. So the two components that HB 374 was to stabilize the market and get those rate increases down, we did with a 7.3%. Find alternative funding. We think we're almost there through the waiver.
Senator Machicki.
So you don't need to go back to slide 5, but you showed us a total ACHIA enrollment. And then I look at the differences here on the baseline versus waiver and the difference for the individual market enrollment. So what you're saying is the funding of $110 million really is about reducing, really what it's about is reducing the premiums for everyone else.
Through the chair, Senator Michie, that's exactly right. That's not just the high-risk individuals. It's everybody in the individual market that helped, not just the most costly or the very sickest of that pool. They came in and added the cost through no fault of their own, but they're a cost driver or one of the cost drivers. But the rates through the Affordable Care Act, it's an all-for-one, one-for-all kind of when you pay. You can't rate based on someone's condition.
Senator Michie.
So are the actuals on, say we had 200 in 2015, just for fun here, I mean, are we talking about actuals per individual on an average basis of the $300,000 range per year?
To the chair, Senator Michie, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Actual medical treatment cost? I mean, when you think about the $500 million and you put a couple hundred people in there, it's $275,000 per person. Are some of the actuals that high for some of those individuals, or is that over and above their normal coverage, so substantially higher?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Michie, I can get you the actual claims of what the numbers were paid in the state of Alaska, but they're astounding of what was paid. And then to spread it across the numbers of 22,000, it's why there's just not enough people to pay that cost and make it affordable.
Senator Michie. Thank you. Senator Michie. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So through the chair, for the benefit or privilege of receiving potentially $110 million from the state of Alaska, will Blue Cross turn over their books so we can take a look at their profit and loss and see what kind of return on assets they're getting on this money?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, yes. I mean, we can certainly get their financials are. Yes, we can. But at this point, they do not have any. It was not pre-funded. It's only after the claims are paid that they're receiving the $55 million. It's not, I mean, there has been a misconception throughout this that we gave them a block grant or we gave them the money up front. We have not. They haven't received a penny of it yet because they haven't submitted a claim for it yet.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So I understand that we set aside, based on actuarials, a dollar figure of about $55 million. And using previous claims as sort of a guide as well. I understand that. And I think, though, to ask the legislature to grant another $55 million now for 2018 without seeing how 2017 sort of plays out, I think is a little premature. I have concerns about it. And I also think, though, that I would like to see by having such a significant state subsidy, I think that Blue Cross, it would make sense for the state to see Blue Cross's books. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Senator Bishop?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Wingheyer, did in your 1332 waiver, did you ask for retroactivity on our $110 million?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. Because they're not effective to 2017, when we submitted it we can't get it retroactive. We've asked for it to be effective 2018. We did put in a clause kind of asking them if they could make it 2017, we'd appreciate it, but they did not take us up on our offer.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Michie.
Well, I don't know how quick a question will be, but it is a question. Department of Health and Social Services looking at 5 Medicaid reduction actions, reducing medical fees. Today we're covering Medicaid plus 30%, changing to Medicaid plus 15%, 5% reduction in hospital in and outpatient reimbursement, not rebasing in 2018, not adding the rate codes that were added since last year, and finally the reducing rehabilitation from 15 hours a week to 8.8 hours a week. How are those going to affect the services that are available to these individuals? And overall in the pool, would that reduce the amount that you're requesting? Would there be some associated savings with the ACHEA pool as well? Or is that just across the entire system and may perhaps not reflected in the higher risk pool?
Director.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, it could very well be that some of these individuals this year have migrated to Medicaid expansion and dropped the cost of the individual market. Because we've only been in a few, when 2015 ended, we had just started Medicaid expansion. So when we came to you in 2016 with this bill, we couldn't see the impact of Medicaid expansion. At this point, we think it's been a positive on the individual market. What they are doing in, what they are doing in HESS benefits this program. Now, we still have our own issues to deal with in the individual market, and we have reached out through the healthcare authority and through the governor's task force on working with providers to address the cost of healthcare. It's going to be a long process, but certainly Commissioner Davidson, Commissioner Fisher, and Commissioner Laddick are addressing the problem overall. It's not just the individual market. It's employers, large and small. It's Medicaid. It's Medicare. It's got to be addressed, and we're working on it. There's no simple solution, and it can't be something that we just do a knee-jerk reaction to. We don't think – there's no reason to think that what they're doing in HESS right now will have a negative impact. We think it will have a positive impact on what – it complement what we're doing on this side. We are working closely with them.
Senator Machicki?
However, you don't – you can't pre-program a downward adjustment in the $55 million ask for the second year. Is that what you're saying based on these changes?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, if we get the waiver, if the waiver is approved, then we would significantly downward ask for less because the second 55, the 2018.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, through the chair. Just want to be clear, so I'm following. So $55 million was authorized last year. You're going to ask us to repeal that and reauthorize it for this year. Then you're going to ask for another $55 million. And under the best-case scenario, what is year three going to look like?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, quite honestly, we don't know. And part of that, I'm being hesitant because what's going on in D.C. is a day-by-day. They seem to be very much in favor of our waiver and our reinsurance program. On any bill or any proposal coming out of D.C. to repair the Affordable Care Act seems to support this program and the funding of it, which would indicate to me that we are going to receive the federal funding for this to continue. But the bill's not passed.
Right. So under the best case scenario, if you receive the if the bill's passed and you receive the funding, what's the best case scenario? In other words, is what will year three look like in terms of an ask from the state, per se? That's it on the right?
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, this is our projection.
Under the best case scenario?
The estimated state funding. That is our projection.
Under the worst case scenario, we're looking at the $55 million going forward. Okay. Just to put on the record, it's certainly these folks are doing a yeoman's job. We're all victims of this escalating health care cost. It's not you guys, you're trying to manage it. But just to put it in perspective, that $55 million, those 2 years of $55 million is your ferry system. And just put that in perspective for when we look at the budget and we're trying to reduce, why not adding a program is probably much more important, because once you do that, it's difficult to reduce. Now, am I sitting here saying that folks should not have access to great health care? Of course not. But it's just the numbers. And again, it's not you folks. You're trying to fix an issue here. But it's a huge chunk of change. And under the best case scenario, looking forward, it's a pretty good chunk of change, too. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier in the presentation, you talked about some states dropping their high-risk pool program, I believe. So what are other states' low population? I mean, Wyoming. Just think about a low-population state that likely has the same proportion of folks in a high-risk category. How are they handling these issues? Have they just decided it's not a state responsibility, or is there some other solution that they've pursued that's working for them?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, they have not looked at a state solution, but they are fighting the battle every bit as much as we are. They, as well as other states, are at this point sitting on the sidelines to see what happens in D.C. and to see what happens with Alaska's waiver.
Senator Michicki.
So does that mean their ratepayers had a 40% increase instead of a 7.5% increase because they decided to stay on the sidelines, or have they had a different result?
Through the chair, Senator, I can get you what their rate increase was at all the states. They were significant. They're down to one insurer. We're not the only state that's down to one insurer. There are other states that took larger increases than we did. Than the 40% that we took in 15 and 16. This isn't just an Alaska problem. We're not the only state that's down to one insurer. We're not the only state that has looked at huge increases, if you will, and is facing a individual market that is in dire straits, as we said last year, or collapsing. But we are the only state that met it head on and said, we're going to do a reinsurance program to stabilize it until we can see what's coming from the federal government or find an alternative way to fund it.
Senator Michicki, then Senator Von Imhoff.
Last question. Is there a magic number where the amount of people in the overall insurance pool can absorb those costs without the dramatic increases? I mean, is it states of 3 million and more or 5 million and more? I mean, all of us that are sort of a low population density state a victim of these higher pool costs?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, that's pretty much a correct statement. The small states, I think Senator Murkowski said it yesterday, a one-size-fits-all is one of the things that is troubling with this, that we need to look for the small states, rural population. It's hard to have a small pool and spread these costs amongst a small number of individuals and expect it to be successful. And we need to find a way to do that.
Hey, Senator Michicki.
So I approached the senator yesterday. We had a Hess discussion with those of us that are the subcommittee chairs and the Hess policy committee chairs. And just one of the things I talked about is, or asked about, is why there wasn't an adjustment factor in the Medicaid reimbursement rates for certain states with either a low population density or some lack of connectivity to the road system, like Alaska and perhaps some other western states. But, of course, Alaska's number one. I can't remember what our population density is. I think it's 0.3 individuals per square mile. The next state is 500%. More of that, which I think is Wyoming or one of the other states. Just wondering if that's something that we ever pursued as a state through our delegation on a formula adjustment for states in this situation. I mean, clearly, a dollar that's delivered Medicaid services in a state with that's on a road system can deliver far more services than a state like Alaska that is dealing with these great distances without road service. Is that something we've ever pursued or considered?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, I think that's a question that you'd have to get from Senator or from Commissioner Davidson, but I know she's working very hard on that whatever is coming out of D.C. not be block grants, not be per capita to address the urban areas or the rural areas of Alaska.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I did go ahead to slide 20. And basically what I see Secretary Burwell's comment is if we don't reappropriate per your suggestion, then the waiver application is in jeopardy. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, that's correct.
Senator Von Imhoff.
No.
Thank you. Director, please continue.
Slide 20. That's the status of the waiver that Senator Von Imhoff, the letter back to Governor Walker deeming the application complete is asking that there be contingent upon the approval the funding for the period of 5 years from the state. And we're working now on what we hope would be acceptable language to the legislature and CMS to get this through.
And when can the legislature anticipate that language?
I would hope within the next couple of weeks. We had a conversation with them yesterday, and we hope very soon to get it. We know between you being on a 90-day session and their session, the waiver itself is in 180-day. They can take up to 180 days to approve it. They don't have to. We know we're in a very short time period to get this through. We know how important it is. We feel like we've moved a mountain to get it to the completed stage already, and so we're not willing to lose it at this point. So we're going to do all we can to get this through as quickly as we can with the approval of the legislature.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to oversell my position or put any fear out there, but you look, you know, this baseline is that's real people. And I know some of my constituents that you talked about earlier were not $3,800 a month for a family of four, but were $4,500 a month for a family of four. And now, I mean, when we were looking at this bill in, well, I don't know if it was May or June, can't remember now, kind of all ran into one there at the end, but this 7.3 number is, I think, a lot better than the double-digit number that we were looking at from Primera. I think there were some numbers, I remember 14 to 17% where they thought it might come in, and now we come in at 7.3. That's going to go a long way to helping people make their mortgage and also paying for their premiums. They are just caught up in this. So the moral of this story is, yeah, it's a little tough here to be writing these checks, but what's the bigger economic cost to the state if you don't?
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, just to follow up on that, have you modeled out the logical conclusion if you don't get the funding from the state? What happens?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I don't know that our model changes any more than when we talked to you last May, June, and we were in special session of the option being the state looking at an insurance company, when much as when we set up the Medical Indemnity Corporation.
The state looking at what?
Setting up an insurance company.
I see.
I think we presented you with numbers somewhere around $200 million to do that for a year and then whatever it would take to keep it afloat. It wasn't a real viable option then. I don't know that it is now, but it was an option. We have talked to CMS. Unfortunately, as the bill existed then, there was not a backup plan within the Affordable Care Act for a state that does not have an insurance company. There wasn't a backup plan for a part of a state or certain boroughs or, let's say, the rural area if Primera decided not to write in rural areas and we had uncovered constituents. There wasn't a backup plan. So we had explored it to say, okay, if this bill didn't go through and Primera left or they declined to underwrite in certain areas, what would we do? And that's pretty much as far as we've gotten, is that with the state step in, it wasn't an attractive solution, but it was the only one we had at the time.
Mm-hmm. Senator Dunleavy.
Maybe it's just me, but it would appear that this may not be sustainable over the long run. And I know we're not the only ones dealing with this, but I'm just wondering at what point will we, the collective we, states, congressional delegation, you name it, get together before we continue to exhaust resources to try and figure this issue out. And I know it's a simplistic question to a very complex problem, but this state, for example, at this stage of the game, with increases such as this, and in a worst-case scenario, and in our other bills we have to pay, and our debt service, and our pension obligation fund, our pension obligations, et cetera, I'm doing addition and using a calculator for 730,000 people. It's going to be very difficult to, what was the term you used? Make payroll?
Make payroll.
Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Could you go forward to slide 19, please? So do you need, in order to get the waiver, $55 million for fiscal year 18, or if you add up all the far right column, $62,542,000 for 5 years to get the waiver?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, we need the contingency to support the five-year waiver, so it's the estimated state funding. Now, because it's estimated, we know right now our numbers are down. We're hoping that with some assistance of what comes out of the Affordable Care Act, with working with healthcare providers, that we can get the numbers down of what we're paying in claims. So we're asking for the 55. But the numbers right now would indicate the 62.
Okay, so if we pass hypothetically a statute or a funding for $62 million for 5 years, would that be sufficient for you to submit that to and receive a waiver?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, yes.
Okay.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Slattic, Commissioner of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, that and also CMS is going to require some legislative language that we're working on right now.
Senator Von Imhoff.
What might that legislative language be?
Commissioner, Director?
That, through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, it's the contingency language that is before you on slide 20. We need to make it legally binding, and we're working on it because it's somewhat of a struggle for us to get that paragraph into legally binding language, that it's contingent. The budget or funding is usually not contingent upon approval of federal funding. So we're trying to work with CMS that they will accept our language and that we can have you accept it as language into statute. Because it's hard to do to say that the funding would be contingent or not contingent, depending on how you look at it, depending on if they approve the waiver. If they don't approve the waiver, then where is it? And so we're trying to work it out with them, that of how exactly this works between their fiscal year and their session, their congressional session, our fiscal year. How do we exactly do this? As we said, this is the first waiver they've ever done like this, and the second waiver they've done ever. And when it comes to the funding, you're dealing with the Department of Treasury, IRS. So since they've never done it, they've never set up a revenue stream, this is all new. And every question we ask, they come back with two. And so we're trying to make sure we're dotting every I, crossing every T, and making sure that we come back to you with that it's as solid as it can be, that we are getting the funding we told you they were going to give us before we go a step further.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Director, please continue.
Not real sure. Brief.
Call the meeting back to order. Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're on slide 21, and this is just to assure you that the commissioner and I and others within Commerce have spoken again with, if we had been working with President Obama, we are now working with President Trump's team. We've worked with Senator Murkowski very closely, Senator Sullivan, Congressman Young, and our senators have reached out to Secretary Price, the new Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, to explain our waiver, why it's important to Alaska, how the revenue stream would work, the impact, how we came up with the idea, the importance, the funding, exactly what we were doing, and we have received nothing but accolades and positive support for it. We think it's a go. There's never 100% degree, but we're pretty certain that this program is going to go from complete to approved.
Has the administration asked Secretary Price and or our congressional delegation for a grant to use this as a demonstration project for the nation here in the state of Alaska?
Mr. Chairman, I know that this has been discussed widely from the senators. I know that the governor is, through the National Governors Association, speaking on this. It's being viewed very closely. It's been written up in numerous articles. I think everyone's quite surprised that Alaska came up with the idea, you know, a small state far away from everybody came up with a way that seems to have stabilized their small market and is getting receiving the national attention to the point that the Trump administration is looking at putting it and others are looking at it, putting it in their repair of the Affordable Care Act as a model.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
So I want to say this in a way that doesn't sound like I question your motives, because I don't. But you asked for 43% more than the $62 million that's required over the next 5 years, which is a $47 million difference. How does, if the legislature were to fund $13 million a year, which brings you to the same number, does that work, or do you need the 5 year committed, which is, of course, across three legislative cycles prior to the waiver being supported?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the waiver is a 5 year program, and so they're looking for a 5 year commitment. It's one of the issues that we've faced in talking to them of they can only do funding on a year to year basis. How do they expect us to get a 5 year commitment?
Follow up.
Senator Machicki.
So again, the $47 million contingency, or 43% approximately, you're still saying that the 62, with if we're over at some point in the future, could be in a supplemental budget that does meet the needs of the waiver?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Director.
The next steps on slide 22 is the budget request. We're working with CMS to clarify the intent language or exactly what the language needs to be to get this waiver approved. And then at the conclusion, we'd submit an RPL following the federal approval of the waiver if it is deemed complete and we do receive federal funding.
And how widespread would the RPL be?
Pardon?
Would the RPL just be in the state of Alaska, or?
Yes, sir.
Further questions? Does that complete your
presentation?
Sir. Do you have any closing comments, either the director or the commissioner?
Yes, Commissioner Chris Laddick, Commerce, Community, Economic Development. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're working closely with the senators regarding what you've read in the paper about repeal and replace, which I think is going to end up more as it's going to be reformed. We've provided our comments. Division Director Wingheyer has presented in front of the Senate Help Committee in a closed-door meeting to address some of the issues that are specific to Alaska. So as this moves forward, we're paying very close attention to this, working with the contacts that Division Director Winghire has at CMS, and we're just going to continue to work. But we're hoping that this is going to slow down now on the federal level.
Thank you for those comments. Thank you for in-depth presentation. I'm sure we're going to be addressing this further, particularly as a national trend-setting issue as well as a fiscal problem facing the state of Alaska. With that, we will be adjourned.